It looks like we're getting closer and closer to some important legislation. Mike DeWine yesterday, the Attorney General, certified a petition for a constitutional amendment that could help make Ohio a right-to-work state, according to the Columbus Dispatch. Supporters gathered 1,000 signatures and submitted a summary of the measure. So that will now that's been okayed, and now we'll move on to the next order of business until it gets on the ballot. Over in Indianapolis, our neighbor to the west, they've already signed their legislation. They are now a right-to-work state. It's the first Rust Belt state to pass the measure. Fred Davis, who is a retired auto worker from Winchester, Indiana, was crying. He was in tears yesterday and marched with around 10,000 union workers. That's what the number says anyhow. Around the Super Bowl Village, shouting "Shame on you!" and "Remember November." Davis was one of the guys who delivered to the governor petitions that were signed by 22,000 people opposed to right to work. There are actually 290,000 union workers in Indiana, so 22,000 people is about a tenth of them. We decided to go right to the source and find out what's going on with this and with Ohio's stature in it. By talking to Matt Meyer, who used to be with the Buckeye Institute and now is with the Heritage Foundation. We have him on the phone now. Matt, thanks a lot for the time this morning. Appreciate it.
Hey, Fred. Good morning. Good morning, Toledo.
Now, are you still with Buckeye and you're just on loan kind of to Heritage, or have you moved over there?
No, you know, I left Buckeye at the end of the year after a solid 2.5 years of rebuilding that institute and kind of getting it relevant again. And as you know, some of the work we did drove a lot of the debates over the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But Heritage, I've been doing national security work for Heritage for 5 years now, so I'm just going to continue doing that. And my focus now, of course, is writing the book, Taxpayers Don't Stand a Chance, How Battleground Ohio Loses No Matter Who Wins.
All right, good. Well, we'll keep an eye out for that one. When it's done, we'll get you back on the air to talk about that. I know that Right to Work has been one of the things you've followed along, too. You've talked with Brian about it in the afternoon on occasion, and it seems to be getting closer and closer. Indiana took the step just this week. Ohio now at least has certified the petition. Give me your first thoughts on Indiana going and how that's going to affect us.
Well, first, congratulations to Indiana and the workers of Indiana who now have the freedom to choose, which is a very powerful thing to have here in America. I think it's going to have a very positive impact for Indiana, and it's going to hurt Ohio, and here's why. You remember about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, Continental Plastics up there in Toledo had an environmental regulation issue with Ohio that didn't exist in Indiana, and they promptly picked up stakes and moved next door. That was a little regulatory issue. If you think that Indiana that will now be able to have more control over its labor cost, and more importantly, greater flexibility in the workplace now that they don't have to deal with potentially, you know, 1,000-page, you know, collective bargaining agreements and work rules and all the things that come with the unionization issue, that flexibility is going to be very attractive to a lot of Ohio companies. And so, as Mitch Daniels, the governor there, said, they in the last 8 years, he was not a right-to-work supporter initially, and after 8 years of watching companies leave Indiana, of watching Indiana not be able to compete for companies that were building new facilities, he became a convert because he recognized that the best way to create jobs in a state is to make sure workers have the freedom to choose on the unionization issue.
Yeah, and one of the things that the union people are throwing up in Indiana and we're throwing up in the last couple of months is the fact that the Governor Daniels did at one time say, you know, I'm not in favor of this. It would create a civil war in Indiana. And so they don't understand, you know, what epiphany he had that allowed him to change his mind and sign the legislation. What epiphany did he have? I mean, what turned him around? Because a lot of times that's the most important thing.
Well, reality, Fred. I mean, he watched companies leave Indiana because of the unionization issue, and he watched as Indiana could no longer compete to attract the companies. And that reality, it, you know, caused him to realize, look, you've got to protect the economic freedom of workers to choose, because we are not living in 1910. We are living in 2012. We live in a globally competitive environment. And therefore, you may want to live in the 100-year-old model. We call it the blue model. But the reality is that model does not work in an environment where, forget about China and India, when you've got states like South Carolina, Texas, Georgia, and other states that have the ability to keep costs down, and have, again, more importantly, that flexibility in the workplace that they can say to the guy, hey, we've got a slow down here today. Can you pick up a broom and help over here? And the guy doesn't say, well, heck no, I'm going to file an unfair labor practice if you make me do something. That's not my job code. That's the kind of shenanigans that we see in states like Ohio, where you need that flexibility as an employer in order to make sure you're maximizing your workers and increasing profitability so that, frankly, at the end of the day, you can pay them with wages and benefits that allow them to have a good existence. And in Ohio, we have that, too, in the sense of Honda is not unionized, and Honda workers are doing far better than those workers at GM, Ford, and Chrysler.
Well, and Honda just announced also that they're going to expand in Ohio again. They're opening up some more plants and bringing some new nameplates back to Ohio.
Yeah, they've got a slight expansion, about 150 jobs that they'll add going forward. They've already invested since the 1970s in Ohio, so it's hard for them to uproot. But remember, their last major plant was not built in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the new car manufacturing facilities have been built down south in the U.S., and so, you know, again, if we want to compete, we're not even on the list to get the new Boeing Dreamliner plants or the new, Continental Tire or Bridgestone Tire facilities that they're now building billion-dollar-plus facilities in South Carolina that we weren't even on the table to compete with because, again, we're just too high tax, high cost, and too much inflexibility because of the power of labor unions here in Ohio.
Yeah. Now, Indiana's on the list, okay, for companies that are looking to expand, but I think we all know, too, that companies don't just decide on the spur of the moment, oh, let's build a new plant. These things are years in the making, you know, 3 to 5 years. They're looking for locations. They're looking for workers. They're trying to figure out whether or not the projections that they've come up with in sales and everything else are going to match up. So when will Indiana, you think, see a benefit from going to right to work?
I think as you watch the Bureau of Labor Statistics data on jobs, you'll watch over the next 10 years in Indiana improve its position. And let me take two minutes to tell you about that. You know, over the last 22 years, from 1990 to today, essentially, when you look at the states that protect the freedom of workers to choose whether or not to join union versus the forced unionization states like Ohio and Indiana until yesterday, what you see is a massive difference in job growth. In Ohio and unionization states, over the 22 years, we averaged about 12% job growth from 22 years ago. That is really, really bad. In comparison, the right-to-work states, the states where they protect that freedom, had 36% growth, so three times as much job growth. From a raw data standpoint, over that period of time, states like Ohio, we added about 7.1 million jobs. In comparison, states down south added 11.2 million jobs. Now, let me put that in a better framework. They added almost twice as many jobs with 65 million fewer people living in those states. So they did it. They added more jobs with a whole lot fewer people, which is a huge, impressive number. Indiana, over the last 20 years, added 11.4% jobs from 1990 to today. They're one of the bottom 15 performers in the country. Ohio, we're the fifth worst. We had 5% growth. So we have 5% more jobs in Ohio in the private sector today than we did 22 years ago. That cannot sustain a state of 11.5 million people.
Yeah. Now opponents will say, yeah, sure, that, you know, that might be true. There are more jobs, but they are all low paying jobs. They're all jobs that, you know, minimum wage jobs. And
Not true. As
the House, the minority House leader in Indiana says, you know, sure, we have right to work, but, you know, now we're on the road to the bottom. Did the numbers bear that out or not?
Well, look, from Dr. Richard Vetter at OU did a study on Ohio, and he looked from 1977 to 2008. And what he found is the real per capita income in worker freedom states was 62.3% compared to just 52.8% in forced unionization states. We were even worse. Ohio, over that period of time, only had 35.7% growth in real per capita income. So the reality is that they're doing better in terms of per capita income in those states than we are. They're creating more jobs. And again, you know, you may be the most zealous union worker up there in Toledo, but at some point you have to make a choice, right, which is, would you rather have a job or would you rather not have a job? And over the course of 22 years, when you've added only 5% of jobs to your private sector, that means there are a whole lot of folks that don't have jobs here that should. And those folks are, I guess, and I think the polling data shows this, when even union workers support the right to choose for this issue, even union workers support it because they would rather have a job than no job, but a union that, you know, the bosses are doing real fine, but the workers have few opportunities to kind of advance their family's best interests.
Sure. Now, other than Indiana, what was the last state before Indiana to go right to work, and how did it affect their union numbers? Because that's the other thing, of course, that's going to be the argument here, that it's a union-busting activity, and that given the authority to write their own check for union dues, most people won't do it. Then the union dies out, and then, of course, the big, mean bosses and the banksters take over and fire everybody they don't like.
Yeah, well, you know, those are great talking points, but they're disconnected from reality. Oklahoma was the last state to do it in 2001. Oklahoma is among the top 15 states in terms of job performance over the last 22 years. And what you have to look at is the reality is this issue of unions protect workers. Think about that for a minute, right? Ohio probably has the second strongest grip of unionization in America. Michigan's probably the strongest, right?
Mm-hmm.
What could those unions do over the last 22 years to prevent jobs from leaving Ohio in mass numbers? They were utterly powerless, and they will remain utterly powerless because they are forces far outside their control. They can picket, they can strike, they can do whatever they want and throw tantrums on the picket line over a company's decision, but the fundamental reality is the only thing they can do is that. They cannot stop jobs from going south or to foreign countries. And by the way, up in Toledo, you know, the Blade did an excellent report a year and a half ago about that showed that nearly 60% of the job losses in the Toledo area were not to NAFTA or overseas jobs. Those jobs went South and West America, U.S. America. So the reality is, unions, even if they're strong, they're powerless. We are in a new globally competitive environment. Ohio has to change for the 21st century and not remain moored in the blue model where somehow, you know, you could just, you know, it was milk and honey for everyone, but because that's not the reality. We have governments that have fiscal crises at all levels. We have jobs that have lost in huge numbers. I mean, we don't anticipate getting back to a full recovery in Ohio till around 2022.
Yeah, I saw that the other day. It's just, it's amazing because that's a whole almost generation of people who are right now just getting out of high school who don't really have anything to look forward to in the job market and are going to look at going other places to the South and to the Southwest for jobs. And they won't come back here, even if the jobs do eventually come back in 2025 or 2022. They're not going to return to Ohio after moving away. Now, we're a little bit closer with the certification of the petition yesterday by Mike DeWine. Does the Heritage Foundation at all get involved in this kind of thing and helping to push this forward with information or monetarily or anything like that?
No. Heritage isn't involved in state issues at all. Heritage focuses on federal issues and all those things. This is really something that it was going to be driven by the grassroots in Ohio. Maurice Thompson over there at 1851, Chris Littleton with the Tea Party, and those folks and Brian Williams with ABC have been working hard to bring this to bear. And the reality is, you know, it's going to take a long time to get those signatures. But the important part of what happened yesterday here in Ohio is, let's start the conversation. You've got to have the conversation about this issue because, again, we can deny the economic reality that we live in, mm-hmm. but the fact remains we've got at some point let Ohioans have a choice. And look, if Ohio chooses to remain moored in the blue model of 1910, that's a choice Ohio can make, and then there are lots of people who can then make decisions about whether they want to stay in a state that will remain a laggard over the next 20 years as we were a laggard over the last 20 years. But let's have that debate. And so Chris and Maurice and Brian have done a wonderful thing of making sure that debate begins. And whether it gets on the ballot in 2012 or 2013 or 2014, eventually we'll have that opportunity to choose. And I think that's important for Ohioans.
All right. Well, hopefully we're going to have that conversation this year yet. Matt Meyer from the Heritage Foundation. Matt, thanks a lot. I appreciate the time this morning.
Hey, thank you.
Yep. Matt Meyer, our guest this morning.